A stint on MasterChef Australia convinced Andrew Pryor that he had nothing to lose by moving to Paris. So he signed up for a course at Le Cordon Bleu, where Julia Child got her start some 60 years earlier. Today, Andrew's teaching cooking courses from his home in Montmorillon. It's a city known for making macaron cookies since the 17th century, in a couple hours train ride west of Paris. Andrew's the author of Paris, a fabulous food guide to the world's most delicious city. Andrew Pryor's back with us on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us how Parisians typically enjoy their day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Andrew, bonjour.
Bonjour, Rick. Merci beaucoup.
What an exciting sort of story you've got. Being from Australia, falling in love with Paris, and moving to France, and now inspiring people to get more out of their travels via the cuisine of the wonderful culture of France. It must be a lot of fun, and how's that going for you in France? Are you settling in? Are you feeling French right now? What's the most gratifying thing in your teaching?
I always feel very French, Rick, but I like to say that I'm the Australian Julia Childs. Look, we're about the same height, I think, but everything else is completely different. Definitely, I feel very French. Unfortunately, with my Australian accent, sometimes the French don't understand me, but look, you get by.
Yeah, well, I think it's something that the food would be a sort of a universal language, I'm sure. And when you
Absolutely.
Embrace that and get to know your local providers and your local restaurateurs and your friends at the cafe, you become part of the scene. Hey, our challenge as travelers is to kind of embrace the local tempo of life and become a temporary local when it comes to eating. And what I'd like to do is just spend a few minutes with you talking about the structure of your tasty day in France, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So let's go.
Oui.
As far as breakfast, what in France, not for the tourists, but for locals, is a typical breakfast?
I would say that you typically in France, and especially Paris, if you go to Paris, it's a croissant and coffee, and that's mm-hmm. it. They also do a tartine. And so a tartine is basically a baguette that you have butter and jam on. But that is more for the kids would usually have a tartine. For everybody else, it's just a croissant and coffee. And they even dip their croissants in coffee, which I just can't do.
I've seen French people dipping their croissants in coffee. And I don't know, I need protein in the morning. And in my early tours, I used to buy a round of Laughing Cow cheese, and I would just slip everybody a little wedge of that, just that creamy white French cheese, and just so they could put something on their baguette other than butter and jam. But apparently the French people, they go with the sugar and the caffeine, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you know, it sort of makes sense because their main meal, we'll come up to it, but their main meal is in the middle of the day. So, and they're usually having that around about 12 o'clock or, you know, just 12:30, et cetera. So you don't want to fill mm-hmm. yourself up too much if you're going to have your main meal right in the middle of the day.
Okay. Well, that's a very important point to remember if you're feeling like, because in England, the traditional fry was designed to get you through until dinner if you were
exactly.
out in the fields. But in France, they just want to get you by for a couple of hours until you can have a good lunch. And my Parisian friends are appalled if I want to grab a sandwich on the go. For
yes.
them, that lunch hour is sacred. And, you know, we have these fast lunches for the local office workers. In France, no, you take a little time for lunch, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. So you're going for about 2 hours. And so this is in offices, this is in shops. You'll often find outside of, especially in the French countryside, places just closed from 12 until 2 or 12 until 2:30
right.
even, because everybody's off to lunch. So it's definitely where you have your main meal of the day. You have that entree, plate, and dessert. You have that at lunch.
Tell us the courses of a lunch, not a tourist lunch, not a quick sandwich on the go, but if you want to sit down like a French person, what would you have?
Yeah, so you would definitely have an entree, main, and dessert. And the entree is usually going to be something light. And that's where these dishes come about. That's just, you know, just a few ingredients, like your, you know, the asparagus with the poached egg. Or, you know, you might even have just a goat's cheese on a toasted baguette or something along those lines. Just really simple entrees. And then you would have a main meal. And depending on the time of the year would depend on what that is. So you might have something a bit more substantial in the winter months and the colder months. And in the summer months, it might be something like a grilled piece of fish or something along those lines. And then the dessert will definitely be, again, a little bit smaller, but it'll still be a sweet treat. And everybody has this, Rick. Even when you go to school, you get an entree, main, and dessert at school.
The entree, that's the appetizer, the first course?
Oh, of course. Sorry, that's my Australianism coming in there.
Because that's confusing to a lot of us, because in some languages, the entree is the main dish, right? So you have a first course, you have a main dish, and a dessert.
In Australia, we do that. We have our entree, main, and dessert, and that gets us into trouble every time we go to the States, because we'll ask for an entree, and a rather big meal comes out.
So
we're always confused. So it's the starter, main, and dessert, yeah.
Starter, and in French, what would the terminology be?
The entree, plat, and dessert. So the main meal is called a plat, P-L-A-T.
Right, the plat. There you go. And in French, the menu is sort of the meal, not the list of food, right?
Absolutely. So the menu is the menu du jour often. So it'll be the best thing to do when you're going to France and you're going to restaurants.
You could mistakenly ask for the menu, thinking you're going to get the list of food, and you could get the plat du jour.
Absolutely, that's correct. So, you know, you want to be careful, but I will say the best thing about the menu du jour is that you can guarantee that it's going to be seasonal and it's going to be fresh. So it's something that they've gone and usually from a market or something along those lines that they've gone and gotten and created the meal from there. And a little tip also, one of the best things about the lunch menus everywhere in France and Paris especially is that the French have a thing called the ticket resto system. And so it's a way that they pay for their meals, and it's paid for, subsidized by their workplaces. And so this in turn reduces the amount for a menu du jour, usually, so that they can attract the French people in. So that's where you'll usually find that there's something like maybe a $12 or a $13 menu, a 13 euro menu du jour, is because they're trying to attract people, the French, with this ticket resto system, their way of paying by these tickets. So we get to benefit from that as well.
The government incentivizes the companies to give their workers this coupon so they can keep the restaurants healthy from a business point of view by stoking their lunch traffic. Is that right?
Yeah, it's definitely. That's exactly what it is. So they get tax subsidies. You get a bit of a discount with your tax if you get that money paid to you in these vouchers. And they can even use them to a certain extent when you go shopping at the supermarket. You can buy food with them as well.
Now, in your book, Paris, A Fabulous Food Guide to the World's Most Delicious City, you mentioned that can cause crowds in the more popular restaurants, and we want to go to the restaurants that are popular with the local workers because they're the best values, but we should be mindful of when they might be full. What would your advice be if you're a tourist that's more flexible? Should you come early or late or what?
I would skip breakfast and be there right at 12 o'clock when they open. And but if you can't do that, yeah, go around about at 2 o'clock or 2:30, as long as the place is still open. If there's a place that's open 24 hours or the place is open all day, then
in other words, at 1 o'clock they'll be busy with the local workers. And if you're a tourist without the language skills and the local contacts, you might be bullied aside. And if you arrive at noon, life will be much easier for you.
Exactly.
All right. We're eating our way across a great day in Paris with Andrew Pryor on Travel with Rick Steves. Andrew hosts a podcast called Fabulously Delicious, and he's written a book called Paris, A Fabulous Food Guide to the World's Most Delicious City. Okay, so we're talking about lunch, and if I want to find a good area for lunch, I always find that if I go to one of the market areas in a town, it would be surrounded by places that are designed for local shoppers that have a good eye out for a good value, and they also will have access to fresh produce. Do you find that there's good places to eat near the markets, or where would you go for if you're just roaming around town, want a characteristic local place?
Absolutely. You're spot on there. The markets are the perfect place to go. All of those brasseries or bistros or any restaurants that are around that market square, they're always going to have really great food. And that's where I would be attracted to a menu du jour for sure from there. What was it? It was Patricia Wells, I think, wrote about it and once said that if she sees that there's a bag of potatoes out the front of a restaurant, that she knows that they make their own chips. And so you don't need to do that nowadays. You can just check. Most restaurants will have Cape Maison written on it, and that means that everything's made in-house. And also a lot of restaurants now and bistros, etc., they'll actually put where the ingredients are from. So, you know, that the beef was French beef, and that's not just great. That it was French beef, but the actual area it's from as well.
So Fate Maison, F-A-I-T-M-A-I-S-O-N, oui. Fate Maison, that means made on the premise.
Made on the premises. And that's, for me, I'm a bit of a dessert lover, so I'm always looking for a dessert that's made on premises.
Well, there you go. Spoken like a true Aussie, I think. Hey, now it's time for dinner. For me, that's the... I know it's French people like to take their time at lunch, but I'm out there sightseeing at lunch, so I'm going to have myself a more of an involved dinner. We've got the courses. Clarify for me, the menu would be the fixed menu, not the piece of paper that lists the food. And the menu in French is called la carte, right?
That's right. So la carte will be the one that... it depends on the restaurant, whether it will be that it'll just be, you know, a set list, or whether that restaurant... You do see a lot more in France, and especially in Paris, restaurants just having the fixed menu. But it's not sort of the fixed menu that I know as an Australian. When we go to restaurants in Australia and it's a fixed menu, there's a, you know, it might be like a degustation meal or a tasting meal. These are just fixed menus because of the wanting, you know, to get the best ingredients and just offering a certain amount of dishes. Because really in France, that's what the restaurants are known for. They were sort of like Japan in that way, that you can find many places that just serve just a few things, but really well. And that's one of the things that I love.
I think that's the mark of a good restaurant. And I used to think the, you know, the daily specials was just stuff on the push list, but no, that's what the chef wants you to have because it's seasonal.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's nothing better than doing that. There's nothing better than going to a supermarket even here in France, and it's not summer, it's winter, and there's no tomatoes. That's when you know it's a good supermarket, because they're not catering for everybody.
Right.
They're just
right.
Saying this isn't in season.
Or in the market, it'll say where it's from. And if it had to be imported, that might be a negative compared to if it was grown locally. And astute shoppers will consider that before they buy.
Absolutely, absolutely. I will say one of the things that you might want to do before dinner, even though dinner is very, very important, is the French version of afternoon tea, which is the goûter. So it's spelled G-O-U-T-E-R, but of course you don't pronounce the R on the end. And the French get taught this from school, you know, when they're kids, they'll have a goûter. So it's, you know, a little snack to get them over till they have dinner at 8 o'clock. But of course, I mean, you know, I'm still a kid at heart, so I have to have my goûter every day as well.
We're eating our way through a great day in Paris right now with Australian Francophile and food enthusiast Andrew Pryor. Hey, Andrew, there's a few points I'd like to clarify in our last couple of minutes here on dinner. First of all, I'm interested in an experience. And if I'm not going to order the tasting menu, which is a lot of fun if you really want to spend a little more money and enjoy the best of the kitchen, I like to arrange with my travel partners to share our dishes, ask for a small extra plate. Is that considered crude in a restaurant? Or if people are polite and so on, does the wait staff accommodate you?
Oh, absolutely. The wait staff would accommodate you. No, that's definitely something that you would be able to do. Mm-hmm. And we do this often, especially when you have things like that are really easily shared around. For example, moule frites, just ask for the moule. You know, you don't get the frites and then just have that at the center of the table.
So this is something that a lot of American travelers are very self-conscious about. And I would just remind people, we are there for the experience. You can max out the experience while saving money and not having to overeat by eating family style. And it's okay in a nice French restaurant to do that. Andrew, one of the highlights for me when I'm traveling is the cheese course, because I just love cheese. What's your advice for a cheese course when dining out for dinner in France?
I would absolutely go for a cheese course, and I would have that instead of dessert. For me, the best advice, it's sort of, you know, you would ask us to see the sommelier for the wine. So I would just ask the waiter and the chef to bring out what they think are the best cheeses, because they're usually French and the French know what it's like to have good cheese. So I would ask them to bring out what they think is the best, and I would have that instead of dessert.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with Andrew Pryor about eating smartly and memorably on our next trip to France. Andrew's book is called Paris, a fabulous food guide to the world's most delicious city. And Andrew, I'd like to just finish off our conversation right now with a comment about the liqueurs that you might have before and after dinner. It's a way to extend the dining experience. And a lot of us travelers don't really understand the ritual. What's your advice for a drink when you sit down and a drink after you're done?
So I would say for a drink when you sit down, definitely go for the apéro. So the aperitif beforehand. So you might want to try something like a Kir or a Pinot Charente, which are designed for that, you know, to have before your meal. But definitely you want to have a digestive after the meal. It is going to soothe your stomach and it's going to make you have a really lovely night's sleep.
So it's a practical thing. The aperitif prepares your appetite, I think literally, and the digestif helps you digest it afterwards. Is that right?
Absolutely. That's what it's meant to be there for. And, you know, after having such a rich meal, if you have a rich meal, then you want to have that, you know, might be a sip of cognac or Armagnac or something after the meal, and that will just totally just settle your stomach down.
God, those French, they think of everything when it comes to enjoying a good meal. Andrew Pryor, thanks so much for your work, and thanks for joining us, and bon appétit.
Rick, merci beaucoup. Bon app.
Andrew's website is andrewpryorfabulously.com. Let's eat our way across Spain in a moment. And for dessert, we'll have a sweet little chat about what they're baking for the holidays in Norway. First, here's something I learned a few years ago about the food scene in England. There are lots of tired old jokes about British cuisine, but the truth is, England has a livelier food scene than ever, and much of it relates to Britain's colonial heritage. A legacy of the empire upon which the sun never set? You can taste it in the variety of chutneys. Originally from India, chutney is a staple condiment in England. On a recent visit to York, I enjoyed a lesson from my tour guide, Tom Wright. He explained to me how chutney is freedom in a jar.
Hi, I'm Rick Steves. I've been in England for about 24 hours, and I'm with my friend, Tom Wright.
Hello there.
Tom's a student here, a history student.
I am indeed, I am.
He is my guide, and we're just having a quick bite to eat in a cool restaurant, and we're eating this plate. This is a lunch plate for two, and I was just commenting on the chutney, and I was asking Tom, what do you do with chutney? Is it like mustard? Do you put it on bread? Is it measured for the different ingredients or whatever? And Tom was telling me a little bit about chutneys.
Well, absolutely. You've got to try and make sure you get the right chutney for the right cheese. Chutney can be made out of all sorts of things, different vegetables, different fruits. It can be spicy, it can be sweet, it can be bitter.
Now, this one is a little bit spicy, isn't it?
It's very peppery.
It's peppery.
It's delicious.
And it's not sweet, it's just, it's right. And you get a whole line of them in the grocery store.
Oh, absolutely. You go to the better shops and you can find half an aisle dedicated to different types of chutney. You've got to get the right one to go with the right meats. If you go and buy a chutney in a shop, spend a good 5 or 10 minutes, because the right one will complement it perfectly.
So now, do you put chutney on something or on the side, or do you use it like mustard on the bread?
Up to you. You can put it anywhere. You can put it on the side. You can put it on your piece of meat or cheese. You can spread it on your bread. Do anything you like.
It's freedom.
Freedom. Freedom in a jar.
Freedom in a jar. That's chutney, and this is traveling in England. Happy travels. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
This is Travel with Rick Steves.